Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. I am Doug Llewellyn, and it's nice to have you back with us today. We're going to be exploring a very interesting subject today, and it concerns people who have expert backgrounds in a variety of fields who later on in their careers become ideal candidates to be expert witnesses in legal cases, and they are highly sought after, and many of these people are extraordinarily talented and knowledgeable, and we're going to be talking about with someone who fits that description to a T today. Basically, you know, we live in a pretty litigious society. That means when somebody gets wronged or injured in an accident, sometimes it's really difficult to determine the fault as well as the cause and the extent of damages in whatever kind of accident it may have been. For example, it's difficult to determine who's at fault in a traffic accident sometimes, oftentimes, in fact. And when that's the case, attorneys will turn to an expert witness to help reconstruct the details of that accident from physical evidence, such as the size of a dent in a fender or from abnormalities in an injured person's CAT scan or MRI image. And that's where expert witnesses really do become a major factor in a legal case. Our guest is one of those individuals today. He's an amazing person. His name is Dr. Bradley Layton. To give you a little idea of his background, he has a PhD in biomedical engineering with a concentration of soft tissue mechanics. And that qualifies him to work with physical evidence and imaging evidence to help determine the causality of injuries such as slips and falls, spinal injuries, or traumatic brain injuries. Dr. Layton has also been retained to examine evidence in criminal cases. It kind of, you know, spans the territory of anything legally involved. And while not serving as a biomechanics expert witness, Dr. Layton can be found cycling to and from renewable energy products in Missoula. It's his hometown right now, the University of Montana. Dr. Layton's road to Missoula began in the small town of Seymour in Indiana. And, you know, there's a long story of how he got from Indiana to Montana. We may go through that. But anyway, I want to bring the doctor on because he is so knowledgeable in so many interesting fields. And he now finds what he's doing when he's called upon to be an expert witness in a legal case a pretty fascinating aspect of his career at the moment. So let us talk to Dr. Layton, Dr. Bradley Layton. Dr. Layton, I didn't want to go through all of your background. It is really pretty darn amazing, and I'm very impressed with what you do and your knowledge. Anyway, welcome. Nice to have you here with us here on Close Up Talk Radio. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Doug. Great to hear your voice, and I'm really glad you mentioned Seymour, Indiana. I grew up in the small town, and one of my memories when I heard that Doug Llewellyn was going to interview me was watching the People's Court. So brings back some great memories.
Boy, that goes back. You're absolutely right. Goes back. Very interesting, you know, from my perspective. Anyway, I should mention you have degrees from MIT, you know, and you've done so many different things. But now you're still doing a lot in the field of energy, but you do a good bit of this expert witnessing. Let me ask you how you got involved in it, and what's it like for you to be called upon to be an expert witness? It's an interesting thing that I know you weren't trained to do this in school. It's a little different to go in a courtroom and be grilled by attorneys, isn't it? I would think anyway.
It is, and when I am deposed, and I've done some deposition training, you know, prior to actually the depositions that I've done, but when I've been deposed, one of the first questions that the attorney will ask me, so, you know, Dr. Layton, have you ever been deposed before? And I usually start off with the answer, well, my dad was a lawyer, so yeah, I was deposed every single night at dinner, so I'm kind of used to, you know, getting grilled. But one of my first cases, though, was a slip and fall. Somebody had fallen down some stairs. The stairs had actually broken under this man's weight when he was carrying some drywall, and it was my job to determine if the wood product itself was actually defective. So I went to the store, bought this, and my son and I sort of tried to reproduce the accident to actually measure the forces to recreate the accident. So in addition to the theoretical things that I do, I also love doing physical experiments as well.
Now, see, that's pretty interesting. You would think a case where someone slipped and fell down some stairs would not end up with this kind of examination by an expert witness like you. I mean, he could have just slipped and fallen, right? You had to prove why the step broke under the weight he was carrying. Am I right?
Yeah, that's right. And I had that's exactly right. And I had a similar one in a mall where somebody had clearly slipped and fallen. And the question was whether or not there was a puddle on the ground. You know, was the mall at fault for letting their ceiling leak and not filling it up? And, you know, a lot of times, as you said, you wouldn't think you would need a PhD in biomedical engineering to determine whether there's a puddle on the floor. But on the other hand, you know, we just keep digging on these cases until we find the facts and build a case and, you know, support what the client is after.
Well, you have to tell me what happened. Was there a puddle on the floor?
Oh.
And was that the cause?
Oh, there certainly was. No, there was actually video of one of the officers coming in on the Segway, photographing it, you know, exactly where this person slipped. I mean, the one sort of caveat was that the slip itself was not videotaped, but you could see clearly that this person was walking directly towards the puddle. The next thing you know, she's on the floor, and the witnesses were looking up to the ceiling because they were looking at the actual drip from the ceiling that made the puddle. So we did some calculations to say, you know, how long it would have taken. As it turned out, it was also after a giant hurricane in 2018. And some of the questions you get from the lawyers, well, did you see the hurricane? I'm like, well, no, I wasn't there. Well, how do you know there was? Well, you know, it was the news and it's all over the weather. So, you know, some of the questions from the attorneys can be pretty entertaining, but, you know, you just keep pace and go with it.
So did the, and I presume it was a lady, did the lady who slipped, I mean, did she have serious injury, serious enough to get you involved?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, she was actually taken out on a stretcher. You know, the paramedics came, and unless someone's a good actor, I don't see how you would actually, you know, fake injuries to have a, you know, so.
Something of that nature?
She broke a finger in this particular case. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, doesn't sound that serious. No, but, boy, to bring in a heavyweight like you for that, good for you. So you proved that, and in that case, what happened? Was the mall at fault?
I think the mall was at fault, yeah.
It ended
up settling. You know, most of these cases end up settling. You know, the trials get expensive, and, you know, once it goes to a jury, a lot of times the jury could be sympathetic to, you know, the plaintiff and end up with, you know, paying more than they otherwise would have if they just, you know, settled out of court.
So tell me, with your background, your extraordinary background, what are the kinds of cases that you are really most apt to be called in on to give your opinion on, you know, what could have happened in the situation?
Sure.
Be pretty wide, I would assume. Tell me.
It is, and you know, so when I was doing my doctoral work at the University of Michigan under Anne-Marie Sastry, we were investigating the mechanical properties of peripheral nerve. And, you know, a lot of times you think, well, you know, a nerve is a chemical structure. You know, it's made of biochemicals, or it's an electrical structure. It is conducting electrical pulses. But we were more interested in the mechanical properties of how nerves actually fail, you know, either under everyday mechanical stresses or in the presence of diabetes. And what we found is that nerve tissue, which is made of collagen, you know, most of our body tissues are made of collagen, that collagen be- can become brittle in the presence of excess sugars. And so actually did a lot of experiments, in the lab, mainly on animal models. So we would make these poor rats diabetic and then mechanically test their nerves either, under anesthetic or after euthanizing them, we would test these nerves. So not many people have done that type of research or level of research. So, if somebody has an injury, they'll say, well, Dr. Layton, how do you know how this tissue behaves? Like, well, I invented a lot of the protocols for actually testing the mechanical properties of nerve tissue. And so that sort of puts me in a unique position in terms of being an expert witness for injuries.
I would also think that some of the cases you get involved in are really, they're difficult and a lot of money is involved in the case, in the outcome of the case. Wouldn't that be true?
It is. It can be a lot of money, and it can also be people's lives. I was retained recently for a murder case in California, and there was no blood, there was no body, and I basically did some forensics to try to determine how difficult it would be to clean up blood with no evidence. And that's clearly a very serious criminal case. And I also learned that I was a little queasier around blood than I thought I might be. So I actually had a neighbor who's pursuing her medical degree to sort of help me with get through some of that. But that's been a fascinating journey. And then a lot of times too, Doug, with a lot of these dash cams, before we used to kind of have to go out to the site, measure skid marks or, where parts might have fallen off of a car. Now you can go to a dash cam and get, the exact velocities, the angles that these vehicles hit. There's all kinds of software for, both modeling how vehicles impact, but also modeling how a body bounces around inside a car or a truck, and then also how, say someone's brain bounces around inside their skull when they've been impacted. So the software and the modeling that we have now is far advanced from where it used to be, and a lot of fun to use.
That sounds fascinating. You really have to get involved in a good bit of research then on some of these cases, don't you? I mean, it takes a good bit of time and work on your part.
It does. No, it does, and one of the challenges sometimes is whether to go out and use a commercial package. There's a lot of software packages out there, as you could imagine, or just to sit down and write my own software. So a lot of times I'll go back to my go back to the books and pull out the constitutive laws. The laws that tell us how tissues deform and behave, and build my own model, and keeps me sharp and takes me back to my doctoral days there at Michigan.
Well, I must say, it does sound pretty doggone amazing. I have to ask you, do you enjoy doing this? It's kind of a challenge, I would think. Certainly different from what you normally do, isn't it?
Well, as you saw from my CV, I like to keep things moving and different. And, sometimes it becomes a little bit routine, but every single case is a little bit different, and that's one of the things I really enjoy most about it is we get a new law firm and a new case, and applying the same principles that I learned in graduate school, but then applying them on a new case every month or so, I'll get a new one.
And when you go all over the country, you're called upon for cases that are, on the East Coast or West Coast or wherever, you will go there and get involved, right? You don't do it all from Montana.
Yeah, I do. And the one I got recently, it was some kind of case in Prague. I ended up not going, but I got a call from some kind of high-profile murder case in Prague. Ended up not going, but the work that I've done, it's been across the country, really just about every state so far.
Well, just for the record, if anybody's hearing this, well, obviously we hope somebody's hearing this, if they would be interested in calling upon you to help them out, I have your website. Is that the best way for them to go to find you, or is there another better way? How would you answer that?
No, Yeah, the website is the best. My company is called Human Powered Future, and that, you know, kind of dovetails into some of the energy stuff I would love to talk about as well. I've founded that in 2010 here in Missoula, but my expert witness work is all laid out there, and there are links to some of the things that I've done through that work through humanpoweredfuture.com.
Okay, we'll repeat that again as we go along. But let's talk about a little bit what you're doing right now. You're still in Montana at the university, I presume. You're heavily involved in renewable energy projects. Why are you focusing on that? You obviously have a deep interest in it. Let's talk about it.
Sure. So, you know, as I mentioned, you know, when I got to the University of Michigan, I was into the neurology and the biomechanics, and there's a lot of really cool gee whiz science that we were doing. In fact, when I moved from University of Michigan to Drexel University, I was still fascinated by collagen, by the molecular structure of collagen, and we, in fact, discovered the world's longest collagen molecule in an ocean-going bacteria. But on the other hand, you know, I'm at a university and I've got a lot of undergraduate students, and, you know, they don't want to be in the lab bent over the microscope. A lot of my students wanted to build solar cars and wind turbines and things like that. I thought, man, I want to do that too. When I was at MIT, my undergraduate advisor, David Gordon Wilson, who had a book called Bicycling Science, he was one of my heroes and my mentors, and I thought, gosh, you know, maybe I could sort of be a David Gordon Wilson kind of professor here at Drexel. So we would go and build these human-powered vehicles. It'd be a bicycle that, you know, it's usually recumbent. In fact, we had one opportunity where I rode one such trike around City Hall with Mayor Michael Nutter in the rain one day. There's a pretty cool video where I'm out there in the rain riding around with him. And we take these bikes and compete, you know, around the country. We also built a solar car, took and competed in the Shell Eco Marathon in Houston, and actually won. We had the best vehicle there, and were featured in National Geographic. And so I started to become very optimistic about what could be done with renewable energy, because as I might have mentioned earlier, you know, when I was there on the faculty at Drexel, it was about when the, you know, the Iraq war was happening. And I was kind of scratching my head and thinking, well, you know, what's this war really about? You know, is it the weapons of mass destruction? Is it some kind of genocide thing? And when, you know, doubts were raised, you know, it's like, well, maybe it's really about oil. And I thought, well, shoot, I'm an engineer. I can sit down, I can do some math, and, you know, what's the big deal about oil? And as it turns out, like, wow, there is a lot of energy in oil. And, you know, as we know, energy keeps the economy going. So I sort of turned my attention away from some of these, you know, geekier things that we've been talking about, and said, well, let me just write a paper that, you know, a general audience can get. In fact, I thought, I'm going to write a paper that's going to be published in Cosmo or the National Enquirer, or something that you pick up on your way, you know, out the grocery store.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, that is a challenge for an engineer, because we, you know, we talk and we think in numbers. And anyway, I wrote the paper up and shared it with a few people, and they said, man, this is still too technical. You know, you're not going to get this in a grocery store checkout line magazine. And so I started looking around for publications, and to a couple different journals. One was Energy Policy, and the other one was Energy and the Environment, and they just rejected it right away. And I thought, well, gosh, you know, why would that be? You know, this is an energy paper. And I emailed Jared Diamond about this, and to my amazement and delight, he emailed me back, and he's like, oh, Professor Layton, you silly man, you are not going to get that kind of paper published in these journals. And in fact, I realized that, unfortunately, science sometimes gets politicized. He's like, no, those are fossil fuel journals. They don't want to hear your fancy theories about renewables and solar and all this, but it did get published in the International Journal of Green Energy, and to my surprise, they actually looked up, and it's got 15,000 downloads, which is
wow.
Part of my original goal was to be able to reach a larger audience. So
yeah.
That was some of the transition that I underwent there while at Drexel University.
You've done so many things, and what you work on is really fascinating, to say the least. Tell me about the book you wrote called Zero Waste in the Last Best Place. What was that all about?
Right. Well, it was a continuation of this renewable energy fascination that I got while I was at Drexel. And when I moved from the Philadelphia area out to Montana, I was a little bit naive, thinking that the landscape would still be very pristine and unspoiled. There wouldn't be any garbage, et cetera, et cetera. But anywhere you go on the planet, there's still us humans and our habits. And I thought, well, gosh, maybe I could make a fresh start in terms of eliminating the amount of garbage, or at least trying to figure out what to do with a lot of my waste. So, one easy step was just composting, and that's a low-hanging fruit. And then you can recycle most all materials. But one of the biggest challenges was plastic, for example, the thin film plastics that don't really have
mm-hmm.
a number and a straightforward way to go back into manufacturing. So that's what I had as my garbage. One day I just walked out and sort of tossed my little tiny bag of weekly garbage into the back of the truck, and the guy's like, well, no, you can't do that. You're not a subscriber. And I thought, well, gosh, I thought that all landfills were publicly owned. It was part of my taxes. Well, no, it's a private landfill. So, you got to pay to play or pay to toss.
Mm-hmm.
And so that,
mm-hmm.
Sort of put me on this path towards, figuring out how we can take materials and repurpose them and reuse them. And I've got another company right now where we're trying to actually make money with it. So, do both, make money and not pollute.
Talking about your company, you mentioned your company is named the same thing as your website, Human Powered Future. Your website, again, is humanpoweredfuture.com. What does Human Powered Future do, your company? Explain that.
Sure. So my day-to-day, Doug, a lot of it, in fact, this morning, I was just over at a client's house, and I'm a licensed professional engineer in the state of Montana as well as several other states. And so the day-to-day is going in, taking measurements and doing engineering, which is fun and pays the bills. But on the other hand, what I would really love to be doing, and what I think we're going to start to see more of, are companies that actually will take the waste stream from one industry and turn it into the input stream to a second industry. And I just learned the other day, in fact, that gasoline, for example, used to be a waste product in the early days of oil discovery, which is kind of hard to imagine. But I've got another company right now called Neodymia, which is a startup, and that's just at neodymiallc.com. And what we've been trying to do at Neodymia, Doug, is actually take coal ash. And so you think coal ash, well, who needs that, or what would I do with that? But actually take coal ash and pull out rare earth elements or so-called critical metals that go into electronics or a lot of high-tech things that that there's a high demand for. So on
right.
Monday, in fact, my partner and I are going to drive out to a big power plant and meet again with the owners there to say, is there a way that we can get access to this and actually produce some of these metals that unfortunately are a lot of them are produced in China, and then we end up buying that and sending our U.S. dollars overseas when we could be doing it right here at home.
That's the company is Neodymia? That's an amazing name. Neodymium.
Well, there's an element called neodymium, and that's what a lot of these high powered magnets are. So it's just a little play on the element neodymium.
Well, it sounds like you're involved in so many things that it's really fascinating, and it's obviously you have such an extraordinary background. And many people, it's tough to know exactly what you're dealing with when you're talking about biomedical engineering and a concentration of soft tissue mechanics. Are you still doing a lot of that? I mean, it sounds like what you're doing doesn't have a lot to do with soft tissue mechanics at the moment. Would I be right?
Well, I love that you asked that question. So when I first started training to become an expert witness, you actually pay these lawyers to grill you. It's like, okay, torture me. And one of the first questions this attorney asks, he's like, "So, Dr. Layton, what is biomedical engineering?" And I'm thinking, like, man, no one is ever going to ask me that question. What a silly question. But but sure enough, one of the very first depositions I ever did, "So, Dr. Layton, what is biomedical engineering?" And, and there's not one answer. It's a very broad field, just like any, field of engineering would be. And so what I learned from that, though, is the attorney is trying to kind of back you into a corner and just giving one answer. And, I actually gave a very long answer, as inclusive and as explicit as I could. And the attorney's like, "So, biomedical engineers just design hospital equipment, right? Is that what you just said?" I'm like, "Well, no, that is not what I said."
Exactly.
Because they're trying to sort of back you in the corner and say, well, if you're just designing hospital equipment, how could you know, what's happening in a traumatic brain injury, for example? So, that's been a fun journey, and I'm really looking forward to being in Florida next week to give my talk with the SEEK group. Yeah,
I would think you would, confront or be confronted by attorneys doing the legal cases you get involved in as an expert witness, trying to twist your opinions and maybe get you, mixed up when you're giving your testimony. Although, as you pointed out, most of the cases settle before they go to trial. Would that be right? Most of them?
The ones I have. In fact, I'm yet to be I'm yet to have any of the cases I've been involved in go to trial, so it's all, it's been report writing and depositions. But I'm sure at some point, we'll have a trial here for one of them.
Well, are you still teaching, by the way? Are you still at the University of Montana teaching?
So I was for about 7 years. The poor University of Montana went through a bit of a crisis a few years ago, and they're still rebounding from that, but I've got a lot of great friends and colleagues there, and I taught in a lifelong learning class there a couple of years ago. In fact, I taught on my zero waste topic. So folks come from the community, and they're like, hey, what can I do with these materials, and sort of move towards this circular economy and move away from the landfill. So that's been fun. It's a thing we call here in Missoula, we call it the town and gown. So people that live in the town or people that are at the university are the gowns, and I've been bridging that gap for the past 5 or so years.
Well, Dr. Layton, it's been amazing talking to you. I know you are really so highly qualified to do what you're doing as an expert witness. Again, anybody who might be interested in getting in touch with the doctor, go to humanpoweredfuture.com. That's where you'll find a little bit about what he's doing, what his company is doing, and more importantly, how to get in touch with him. Dr. Bradley Edward Layton. Dr. Layton, it's been great talking to you. Hope we can do it again sometime. I'm very impressed with what you do and your background.
Doug,
thank you so
much. That was fantastic.
Okay?
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You are welcome indeed.
You've been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
We certainly do. I'm Doug Llewellyn, everybody. Thank you for being with us. We'll see you next time. Till then, take care, and bye for now.